Now, All Access with Cardinals manager Ollie Marmol. Sponsored by Window World. Simply the best for less. Siteman Cancer Center. National leaders in cancer. And by Circa Sports. Circa Sports. Sports betting the way it should be. On the voice of the Cardinals, KMOX.
It is a pleasure to be joined by the manager of the St. Louis Cardinals, Oliver Marmol. He is with us every Tuesday with Chris Ronji. I'm Tom Ackerman. Bernie Mickles will be jumping in here shortly. We're making sure we can get a connection with the big dog. Ollie, it is great to visit with you as always. You're down in Miami. You got the Marlins today. Look out. Here's the NL Central. Not a team in the NL Central under 500. In fact, the Brewers, who are currently bringing up the rear, are 3 games over .500, and you haven't faced any of them yet. I mean, this is just...
No, we have not.
What a wild time it is in the NL Central.
There's some good teams in there, man. They do a lot of things well. Some good athletes across the NL Central. Run the base as well. Some good defense across the way, too. So it'll be an exciting... Once we get to start facing our division, I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Do you really pay much attention to what is happening around... when in baseball, not just necessarily in the Central, of course, you want to know what the standings are when you get deeper in the season, but is it the kind of thing where you know what's happening around the game outside of your own team and the teams that you're facing?
Yeah, and not across the entire league. I mean, you keep up and make sure you know what's going on, but you pay a little bit more attention to the teams you're facing in the next 3 to 4 series as far as advancing them. So you're a little bit more of an up-close look with that more than anything.
Let's join Bernie Mickles. He is with us via audio. Your video viewers won't be able to see him just yet, but we know he's with us. What's up, Bernie?
That's right. Nobody needs to see my ugly mug. I'm sorry about having some technical issues.
You beat me to it, Bern.
I know. Bring it on, man. Bring it on. And I'm sorry if the audio is a little fuzzy. I wanted to ask you something. There's something that really, really intrigues me about the story of this season so far. And it started in spring training when you would tell the media every day about the buy-in, the style of baseball, how you're going to approach it, just pushing it on the bases, doing the little things, moving guys over, that kind of thing. And your team has been great about trying to do that. But here's the question. What is it about this team that made that approach perhaps more feasible and workable compared to teams you've had here in the past?
Yeah, you're a little bit more athletic and you have the ability to do it. You can't depend on an Arenado hitting homers. Like you have to play a different style of game. And in order for us to have success, we have to double down on those things. And up to this point, I believe the group has done a really nice job of doing exactly that, man. They're running the bases really well. And there's a difference between being aggressive and being smart and aggressive. And our group is picking their spots as to when to do it and when not to. And it's been fun to watch. And then we know we have to play good defense. And this is why it was such an important part of our spring training when you look at going on the outside and getting an outfielder compared to letting Fermin and Sajacy and give them time out there, man, the work that they've been putting in with Jay has been incredible because we know we're going to have opportunities where Church and Scott are in there and we have to pinch hit because we're down and Sajacy and Fermin are going to have to take at bats. But yesterday was a great example of we're down. Therefore, we don't want to make two moves with Fermin and put Church in center. We leave Fermin out there and he does a really nice job of running that ball down in center field, man. So credit to him and the work that he's putting in. But defense is, we knew, is going to be extremely important as well.
Ali, I don't know if you remember this. I texted you during spring training and I said, I think you're in your sweet spot as a manager because this is the style of ball and the type of team that just seems to be a match for your vision about how you want to play the game. But what I wanted to ask you, and I'm not casting any aspersions, I'm really not, but the fact that it's a young team, does that make it easier to implement this? Because maybe some really older veterans, maybe they just have their own ideas. Was this an easier sell because it's a younger team?
That's just reality. Anytime you have a younger group, being able to mold them and have a collective identity is easier. That doesn't mean you can't do it with veterans on the club. That's not the case at all. But there's a style of play here that when you look at the churches and JJ, like all the way across the board, we have similar guys that need to play a certain style of baseball in order to have success. And being able to clearly define that in spring training and double down on it and make sure that guys are like truly committed and bought into that style of play was by far the most important thing we could have done in spring. So I know it's early, but the mindset that the guys are playing with is something that is definitely sustainable. You're going to have ups and downs as far as your ability to execute in a game, but we can't ever waver from the mindset that we're seeing today.
Ollie Mason Wynn told me one thing he appreciated about you is you will tell players sometimes not always what they want to hear, but you'll be straight with them and you'll explain to them what they need to hear. Mason Wynn has been one of those who has really started to show resurgence here offensively. 15-game hitting streak for Jordan Walker, and everybody's buzzing about that. But Wynn's at 7 and has been hitting pretty well here over the last week.
He has, and I appreciate that comment from him, but it's how I came up through this organization, man, in 2007, 8, 9, 10. Like, you guys told you what needed to be said and not just fluffed you and told you the things you needed to hear, man. That's not how you get better. And sometimes there's periods of your relationship with players from a coaching standpoint where, man, you have to be hard on them, and they learn to appreciate it a little bit down the road and sometimes not in the moment. And that's okay. You have to be okay with that. At the end of the day, they need to know that you love them, you care about them, but that we need to get better. And they appreciate it once they get further into their career and they understand that at the end of the day, all you're trying to do is make sure they play for a very long time. But Mason's a good example of that. He's putting in the work, and it's one of those where early results aren't what he wanted, what we wanted, but the work that's being put in is exactly what you would want. And that's where you just continue to support them and make them know, like, hey, listen, just stay on track and things will turn around. But it was awesome to see him in Houston in front of his family and friends. I mean, there's a lot of people there for him, and for him to come through, I believe he drove in a total of 7 runs or so. But to see that in Houston and just see his overall excitement over that was awesome.
Ollie, what is the level of teaching that happens at the major league level? Because especially when you talk to you know, more veteran players, they kind of they see themselves as, you know, self-contained, self-starters. You know, maybe they'll get some advice here and there, but they just sort of do their job, and a lot of what they learned in the minor leagues before they get to the big leagues. So what is the role of the coaching staff in teaching once guys get here?
No, that's great. There's a lot more teaching every year. Guys are getting up here younger and younger. And if you don't have a staff that is passionate, not just good, but just passionate, live and die. I mean, I wish I could show you my text threads starting early this morning from our hitting department on some of the things that we're talking through with our players today. Like, there's just, you wake up and you are longing for what's next for these guys. Like, if you don't have a staff that's passionate about teaching, then it's tough. But I think there's a little bit of a misconception as well as far as veterans not being coachable, or that they don't want to be taught. Man, the best guys in the league, they want to be taught. They want to be told. They want that accountability. And some of the veterans we had that are no longer here, man, they truly wanted that. So I think sometimes there's a misconception of a guy's been in the league for 10, 12 years. You just let him do his thing, man. The best that are around for that long, man, they want what's next for them. And that's the fun part of this gig. You get to do it with some of the older guys. You get to do it with the young guys. But you definitely have to be passionate about that part of the game if you're going to coach at the big league level today.
Ollie, I want to ask you, I know this is a question, man, you get asked so many times, but we got to do it again. The back end of your rotation, back end of the bullpen, when those guys are available, I mean, lights out, right? But I know you and Dusty are trying to settle down the middle innings, you know, the 6th, the 7th, maybe sometimes in the 5th. Where are you in that process in terms of candidates or guys that you really want to use, but they've got to do a better job? Where are you in the process as far as sticking with them? How close are they? You know, where are you right now with that part of the bullpen?
Bernie, that's a great question. And I think you have to give it time to define itself. And that's kind of where we're at. If I'm point blank answering the question, is we're given an opportunity to different guys to show what they're capable of. Like a game like yesterday is an interesting one. O'Brien's down, JoJo's down, Brule's down, Graceffo's down. And you're trying to stay away from Stanek if possible, right? So you have to finish that game with a combination of Soriano and Swanson and Fernandez. So you're down two. Like, you give an opportunity to those guys to keep the score where it's at. And if they show well, you give them more opportunity, and then you put them in a closer kind of leverage situation where you're tied in the six, maybe up one, and see how they handle that. But Graceffo is someone that's going to continue to get that opportunity at the moment. We have to get Swanson back on track. We saw how capable he was last year, but you got to remind yourself he's got, what, four months as a big leaguer? So trying to draw conclusions on a four-month career is probably not the smart thing to do. You just have to play it out. And then Soriano has shown really well, man. That small transaction that Haim and his group pulled off with the Nationals has been awesome. This guy has done a really, really nice job. He's settling in against both righty lefties, and he's more than capable of throwing some leverage innings for us. And he already has. So that's where I'm at with the pen. The back end has done a nice job, but they can't throw every day. I think that's one of the things. Maybe next week we can dive in and spend a little more time on truly bullpen usage and the ins and outs of relievers, and how often can you throw them? When is it too much? Like, what goes into a guy not being available on a certain night? And because I think there's a little bit of a misconception there as well when it comes to who's available, who's not, and how often they can throw. If you're truly trying to look at this as 162 and win the game within a game, which is health, there's a lot that goes into that.
And how about your starters going into games consistently to save your bullpen, to make sure that they're okay? Do you feel good about how they're going right now?
Yeah, I do. I really do. Last time through, they did a really nice job. But that's also a balance in April. When you look at what we did last year and what we're doing this year, like, there's times where a guy has an extra inning on him. But depending on how you've used the bullpen and leading up to that point, man, you got to protect both sides, the starters in April and the relievers in April. And there's times where you can push a guy for an extra inning because his stuff looks good and he might have another 15 pitches in him. But redlining him, and he's going on short rest next time, might not be the play either. So the ins and outs of that are super interesting. It's the game within a game that Dusty, Scows, myself, like, truly love making sure we are super detailed with and giving our guys the best chance to stay healthy. Their level of execution, and performance, when they toe the rubber, that's up to them, right? But just giving them the chance to actually stay healthy through 162.
Jordan Walker, we have talked a lot about him, and he's gotten plenty of attention nationally. He's on that 15-game hitting streak right now. Do you feel like, and we did discuss him last week, and if he starts to go into some sort of dip of any kind, that the work continues, just let him go. Do you feel like does he still look right to you? Going back to last week and the week before, do you see any differences in the way he's approaching at bats now?
Yeah, some slight differences, but nothing alarming, and something I think he'll address over the next 24 to 48 hours and get back on track from just the way he was seeing it compared to how he's seeing it today. But nothing that is out of the norm from a hitter having some ups and downs throughout a week or two. But the work that he's putting in is consistent, and that's the beautiful part of all of this, man. He has something to anchor to now, and he's not searching. He knows what gives him success. He needs to just continue to go back to it daily. You're going to get off track from time to time, but you know where you're going back to in order to feel good. And that's the ins and outs of a hitter at the big league level, and coaching hitting coaches at the big league level, is just making sure you don't spend too much time outside of those guardrails.
Ollie, I was looking at some stuff earlier about JJ Weatherholt. Won't bore you with that, but
yeah,
I'm gonna give it to you from a media and a fan standpoint. You're 22 games into the season, but when I watch him play, I don't think of him as a rookie. I mean, he looks like he's been doing this in the big leagues for 5 years, maybe even 10 years. How do you see it? I mean, do you even think of him as a rookie anymore because he's so on top of things?
No, I don't. in the sense of when he's between the lines, man, he does so many things well. And when you talk about having a true leadoff, that's what he has shown up to this point. Like, the dude understands the strike zone. He can use the whole field. He can hit for some power. He can take his singles. Like, he's going to get on base, and that's what you're looking for to start a game. So he's done a really nice job. So from that standpoint, no. But I think when you talk to him, he's so hungry for what's next that it's just awesome to start to dream on what's possible for him 3-5 years down the road. You know, his mentality is incredible. His steadiness and overall demeanor, like, these are the things you look for in a young player. And he does it at such a high level that you forget this is year one for him. The maturity level's through the roof.
How about this note from Chris Tuno? JJ Weatherholt has been hit by a pitch in each of the last 5 games, establishing a new franchise record and tied for the second longest in MLB history, going back to 1903.
That's just I'm okay with that one. I'm okay with breaking that streak, though.
Yeah, that would be fun. It's crazy. You guys have been hit by multiple pitches in 4 straight games as well. I don't know. It's just maybe just a freak thing. I don't know what's going on there.
No, me either. The guys, I do like them kind of just knowing that, hey, if I can get on base, I can get on base. And I went out there to check on Mason one time he got hit. He's like, hey, it was a 1-2 count. I'll take it all day, which is perfect, man. They understand the value of getting on. And that's the thing, man. We're creating a lot of opportunities in being able to score. And this is the thing I'm excited about, just because we need to continue to get better and better at taking advantage of those opportunities. Right now, when it comes to runner on third, less than 2 outs, man, like, we're right in the middle of the pack. And that's what people think, runner on third, less than 2, that run scores 80% of the time. Now, league average is right around 50, 52%, and that's where we're at today. But we're fifth in the league in creating that opportunity, right? So we've had our chances there. We're in the middle of the pack. As we continue to have a better approach and driving those runs, it's just going to create a little bit more of a weapon. So these are the things when we talk about being better in May than April and better in June than May. Those are those little things that you just want to take a little bit more advantage of and some separation.
Ali, I think for the fans, just relaying some stuff that, you know, I pick up on, left field's kind of a hot spot, just a really hot spot in terms of area of discussion. Like, how do you see that position the way that the guys have been handling? What do you like? Yep. What do you think can get better, needs to get better? Just give us an assessment, the good and the bad.
I think this is that balance we talked about before the season started of development over winning. And there's going to be times where you just have to continue a rotation regardless of outcome. We're given an opportunity there to Fermin, to JC, to Church. And the way we're thinking through it in order to give our rotation and bullpen the best chance is Church is obviously your best defender. So if guys are going to be a little bit more line drive in the air against our starter, then we try to match up based on who's on the other side on the mound with Church being out there. But you can take your shots when McGreevy or Palante on the mound that are heavy ground ball guys of giving an opportunity to your Fermin and Sajacy's based on matchup and what the pitcher across the way has arsenal wise. So we're trying to go back and forth there in giving them an opportunity and keeping that rotation going while also putting our pitcher in the best position to have success.
Ali Marmol with us on the Gashouse Gang on KMOX. We are actually going to let you go because you got a bus waiting for you downstairs, and you got to get yourself over to the ballpark.
Wait, doesn't the bus wait for him? He's the man.
Yeah, what is that? What is this?
I know.
What are we talking about here?
Well,
it's your bus.
My God,
it is. I do want to be respectful to the other 30 guys on there.
He's so respectful.
Nah, you know? If you got to start guys, big. No, man.
There's going to be
start big time.
Show him who's boss.
There's
going to
be a time where Ali Marmol gets on the bus, and that bus is gone. I don't care who's not there. If you're not on the bus, it's gone when Ali gets on it. But for right now, he is respectful manager Oliver Marmol, and we appreciate you.
No, no doubt, no doubt. I got one more. If someone has one more question, I can.
How about a quick IL update, if you don't mind? Lars Nootbaar probably is the one that everybody wants to know.
No, that's perfect. Lars is doing well. His progression is continuing. He's the running progression is the thing that's going to take the longest, just making sure he feels good cutting and in and out and doing all the things that's needed once he's in a real baseball game. So we are getting closer to him being able to get in some games, but this progression needs to continue before we check that box and say, let's go. So in talking to him, progress is good. As we get a little closer, a week out or so, I'll be able to tell guys when we think there's a date for him to start that rehab.
Thanks for the time, and good luck tonight against the Marlins.
All right, appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Oliver Marmol, Cardinals manager, with us on KMOX's Gas House Gang. We're going to come back with a lot of analysis and discussion on the Cardinals. We're going to take you up until 1 o'clock.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Salinke Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. Chesterfield Fence and Deck. And Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji, and me, Tom Ackerman, with you. Daniel Hinkamp's in the producer's room. Matt Pajeski's in the room here, and we just had Ollie Marmol. Bernie, your reaction to the Cardinals manager and all the things he had to say? I think you're right. I think he's in a really good place.
Listen, I just sensed a big kind of a change in him as they were going into spring training. I could just tell he was really, really fired up by the chance to manage this particular group. And I think it's understandable in a way, because if you're going into whatever we want to call this season, a retool, a rebuild, a renewal, or whatever, you know, there's a huge veteran element that's no longer there, and Ollie and his coaches are not only just teaching these players and schooling them and working with them, but they're also empowering them to take over the team. And take over, you know, leadership of the team, and to be there to support each other. So they've managed to create to cultivate a tremendous, tremendous clubhouse culture already. But I think, and you know, I know Ollie didn't want to answer in a way that would seem like it was disparaging, you know, veterans who are no longer here. But I think that he feels free to implement, truly free. To implement the kind of style of play that he really, really likes and wants, because the young guys are so enthusiastic about buying into it because they love this style. I don't know that it would have been, frankly, an easy sell with some of the rosters they've had in the recent past. I don't think it would have been an easy sell, but it's ideal for this team.
And Chris, you went down that road with him, and I thought that was really good. You know, that was the other thing that Mason told me when I interviewed him about Ollie, is he said he wasn't here at the time, but he understands that Ollie had some big personalities that he was managing, man. I mean, that's not a negative, but Albert, Yachty, Waino, Arenado, Goldie, I mean, these are established veterans who are going to do what they do, and they're going to take in consideration what he has to say. This is a totally different situation. And
yeah.
I think it's right up his alley.
Well, you got younger players who are still malleable, right? I mean, you're still trying to – they don't know everything by the time they get to the big league. Some of the fundamental stuff you should – I mean, but if you've played baseball your entire life and you get through minor league ball, even if you're only playing there for a year or two, you should have a pretty good grasp of the fundamental stuff. But it's everything else that, you know, you do need to learn when you get to the big leagues. So that process never ends, and it never really ends for veterans either. But there are a lot of guys who are fairly set in their ways. They've been doing things a certain way, 8, 9, 10 years. They know what their routines are. They know what they're comfortable doing. It's not to say they don't pick up little things along the way or ask for advice, but this is managing a team like this is a whole lot different than managing a team with a bunch of 35-year-olds on it. Or guys who have been in the league for a dozen years and who know what they're doing. It's one of the top two youngest teams, right? In baseball, mm-hmm. It might be the Nationals, I think, are possibly the youngest team, and then the Cardinals are second. So when you have a team that is as young as this one is, with only three guys right now on the roster in their 30s, there's a lot to work with there.
Yeah, certainly is. But when Albert Pujols is thinking about calling it a career, he did lean on Ollie. Not that he didn't on other things, but it was Ollie who steered him away from that and said, no, no, big fella, we need you. And
yeah.
I'm going to give you some advice here, blah, blah, blah. We're going to get you back to where you need to be. And he credits Ollie with keeping him going. And lo and behold, he had this phenomenal second half of the season, chases down 700 home runs, puts the Cardinals in the playoffs with their best hitter. Ollie could manage then, and he can manage now. And he has some ups and downs, in just like everybody in that position.
Now, I know there's a fair question to be had, and I don't know if it was yesterday or at some point recently on a Gas House Gang, a texter was, and I'm just paraphrasing, but asking about, you know, what has Ollie done in the playoffs? Like, you know, you can win three games in the playoffs as a manager, which I think there's some truth to that, that, yeah, you're... Managers really do make their money once they get to a playoff scenario where every decision is a huge decision, or can be, not like in a regular season, right? But I don't have much, I don't know, I don't have a ton of concern that if they have a good roster of players and they do get to a postseason, that suddenly Marmol's not going to be able to manage a bullpen in a playoff game, or figure out how to put a lineup together in a playoff game. You know, that's not a concern I have, and maybe others do, but I think he's pretty good at what he does. And I'm not quite sure why there's still some pushback against him. And it's probably, in my opinion, I think there's too much pushback against him.
Well, guys, this is where being the old guy on the show comes in handy. And what I mean by that is, you know, I think that the people that are not as inclined to be as fair or supportive of Ollie Marmol, they'll always hang on. They got something that they can always hang on to kind of use against him, which is game one of the 2022 series with Philly, the Ryan Helsley situation. He was a little slow to react. He caught a lot of grief for that. People can cling to that as some kind of evidence, if you will. That's one spot for a rookie manager managing the first postseason game of his career. I think he would handle that situation a lot better now. But what I was going to say, being the old guy, people forget it. And I could go back, and I won't, but I could review about 10 games. And I'm not saying this to take shots at Tony La Russa, because I love Tony La Russa. Tony La Russa did some stuff in postseason games with the bullpen where you're like, what, you know? So this idea that only a young manager does shaky or questionable things, like in the playoffs, nonsense, absolute nonsense. And that's why it's good to be old. Most of the time it's not. In times like this, it is.
I'm right there with you, Louis. We'll take a break. We will come back.
Danny Nicholas on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bagel Loan, and by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
The Gas House Gang on KMOX. You know, it's just an hour of talking ball right here on the home of the Cardinals. We talked to the manager, Ollie Marmol. Last week was fun. Rob Serfolio, the assistant GM. We'll do that again. Surf and I talked on Wednesday, the day after that, and he thought it was a blast. He was hoping that Ollie would have some questions for him and grill him a little bit. I know there's a lot of collaboration within the organization, Bernie. And speaking of the minor leagues, what do you think of the depth at pitcher right now with Hunter Dobbins coming on strong here? He's starting to get himself in position. Can he snag one of these spots in the rotation?
Well, I think it's safe to say that when they get to a place in the schedule, which may be soon, where they need a six starter, even if it's a spot starter, the way Steven Matz did it last year, the way McGreevy did it last year, Hunter Dobbins, you know, profiles as the guy. Because I, you know, you look at Memphis without Richard Fitz, who's out for the season after surgery. You know, Quinn Matthews is still struggling to his command, and you know, I don't know that they would. They think anybody else is quite ready yet. So I think it would be Dobbins almost by, you know, because there's no one else, except he's looked really, really good. And he's clearly priming for this spot. And he was a guy that Heim Bloom drafted, you know, a guy that's got some talent. So I look forward to seeing him pitch. I don't know what to say about the rotation, you know, guys, from the standpoint, I'm not being critical of the rotation, because these pitchers are all doing what they can with the ability and the skill set they have. But it's really tough in today's game where you have a rotation where no one in there really has got great, and I mean like great swing and miss stuff. It really puts the Cardinals at a disadvantage. And I always try to keep that in mind. I can't hate on those guys. I mean, you know, it's not like they decided, well, no, I'm not. No, I don't want to throw hard. I'm going to just like purposely throw slower and not strike people out. You know, physically, they are what they are. So I think it's going to be a season long challenge. And, you know, for a while there, the rotation was starting to click, even with some of its limitations. But, you know, last night it was disappointing just in general to see McGreevy pitch as well as he did for most of his time there. And then all of a sudden it unraveled on him. But that's also what happens when the ball's in play all the time. So there was some bad batted ball luck there last night that worked against them. Good example of that.
Well, that's why I imagine the Cardinals had the draft philosophy they did the last time out, and that is they tried to pick up guys who can get swing and miss. And it's not like that is some sort of, you know, groundbreaking formula that no other team has thought of. You mean we should get strikeout pitchers or guys who miss bats? Like, no, I mean, every team wants that, but it may not have been, the Cardinals hadn't been as successful at doing that lately. And so I think they know they had to make an alteration there, and hopefully that ends up working out once those guys get to the big league level. But as of right now, I mean, I'm not all that interested in making any changes in the rotation. And it's not because I think that, you know, they've got five guys who are great and they all need to stay in the rotation. It's just that there's not really a point in doing it. I don't think you bring in Dobbins just yet. There is going to be value in getting him big league reps, and he can use that moving forward, but I don't feel any sense of urgency to do that with this team. This is not a team that we are trying to get into the postseason and anything goes in order to make that happen. This is a team that they are just still trying to feel out some of these players. So I am in no rush to see him. I hope we get to, but I don't think it's something they have to do right now.
Yeah, these guys are coming. I mean, eventually you're going to see Quinn Matthews, Tekoa Roby, Liam Doyle, Tanner Franklin. You go as deep as you want into this prospect pool, and you're going to start seeing some guys. I am curious about this Bridge because, you know, Bridge has become a popular topic among the Cardinals because of the shorter starts, and you do need a Bridge guy, and Gordon Graceffo has stepped into that. Bernie, what about Bryson Motz as a 2+ inning Bridge guy, says the real third man? And what do you think of that spot in the Cardinals pitching staff?
I think he would be worth a try there. I really do. And, you know, we were talking about this with Matt Pauly last week, and, you know, Matt thinks the Cardinals, because I've never asked any of the Cardinals people how he projects Bryson Motz, but the feeling in the organization is, at least right now, you know, they think he could be a reliever, a valuable reliever, because he can be that more than one inning relief pitcher. So I think he's a legitimate candidate at some point to come up here. You know, the one guy, and I'll be quick on this, the one guy that, frankly, I still don't understand, and if we get Cerfolio on or Chaim Bloom on, you know, it's a great question. You know, what's going on with Tink Hentz? And I know, I don't know when the last time was that he pitched, if he's had any physical issues, but I'm looking at this. He's got a 9.95 ERA in Memphis, and he's still only 23 years old, and what a formidable talent. And I just wonder what has happened. Because of all the injuries, he lost his chance to be a true impact arm in this organization. But that's one guy where, wow, it makes you think, like, what could have been. And now you wonder, like, well, at this point, you know, what is there we could look forward to? You know, because I don't know anymore.
Yeah, it's a great point to bring up. I do think about that. Man, there was a lot of hype around Tink Hentz for a time.
Bernie Miklas on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bagel Loan, and by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
12:50. We have about 7 minutes left in the Gas House Gang. Glad you're with us. But you can always listen to the entire show via podcast form, however you take in your podcast. We're there, the Gas House Gang. We're here every day, Monday through Friday, although tomorrow's a morning game. Tomorrow's an 11:10 start.
Yeah, what are they doing time in Miami? What's with these 11?
Yeah, get yourself a little Cuban coffee and head over there.
I guess it's at noon their time, huh? Yeah.
You know, guys, real quick, you know, I was watching the game last night and my wife, Kirsten, she said, like, is there like anybody there? And I said, no, there's no one's there. No one hardly ever is there. And I'm thinking about it. You talk about a boondoggle, like with the state of Florida and the city of Miami and all the money they raised for the owner of the team. They've got this exorbitant, luxurious ballpark that nobody goes to. And the taxpayers are just continue to spend a fortune on its upkeep and everything else. And it's like, I don't know, who in the heck decided Miami would be a great, thriving place for Major League Baseball? I mean, that's a decision I think somebody would like to take back, you know, from many, many decades ago.
Well, I guess they were, I mean, weren't they just thinking Florida's a big baseball state? People love baseball down there. A lot of Cubans live in South Florida. They love baseball. So maybe there would be an automatic audience, but I don't know. I've never been to that ballpark. Have you been there, Tom?
Yes, I was
Is
just
it difficult
there for,
to get
just
to?
There for Is the it? WBC. So the promise was that they would build this. It's in Little Havana, and they would build it, and then they would have development around it. You know,
yeah.
they'd have restaurants and bars and things. There is none of that. It is a ballpark in the middle of Little Havana, so it's hard to get in and out. And I think people in Miami are upset not only about that. I think that they don't really have any big stars that they can rally around, I think, is another one. But the other one is, remember now, they won not one, but two world championships.
And then immediately traded everybody.
Immediately.
Yeah.
And boy, did that tick people off.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's a great
like,
point.
A lot. And
you let go of Miguel Cabrera as he was becoming a star. Mm. And I mean, what are they doing?
It's a great sports town. Really is. I mean, they love their sports down there. It's a cool town. There's things being built all over the place. It's great. But man, they really are down on that Marlins team. And not even Derek Jeter could get that thing going. So it's a tough deal. But an early game tomorrow, so just be aware of that. We will not have the Gas House Gang.
You know, bring back that home run sculpture.
No, it's outside, actually.
I heard. Put it back in the ballpark. Put it back in center field.
But as for the, like, once you get
I actually liked it.
I did, too.
It's kind of silly.
I love it.
I was there for the first game played there, you know, which was also Mike Matheny's first game as manager.
Oh, really?
I thought it was a cool place. Gaudy and all that. Yeah, but I thought it was a cool place.
Yeah, it was very cool. Very Miami, you know, with all that. Once you get in there, it's actually a cool little ballpark. Like, it's smaller than Busch Stadium. It has a roof, but, it, you know, they can the place gets loud, and, you know, they can open things up a little bit. They have a bar out in left field that I believe used to be the Clevelander, and now it's just like a sports bar. But, you know, they've got a lot of great stuff going for it. Just nobody goes.
You know what? I hate saying this, and I've said it before. I don't hate Tropicana Field. I've been to it. I don't think that when you are in the ballpark, it is as bad as everybody describes it as being. I think it's okay. And those are the two ballparks they've got down there, right? You've got Tropicana, which everybody thinks is the worst park ever, and Miami, which is in a wonderful place, but they can't draw anybody.
Yeah, which
is a really interesting dynamic in that state.
Which, Bernie, is the crazy thing is that I went to, I would say, one of the loudest sporting events of my life there in March. I mean, when the Dominican Republic played Venezuela, I could feel the stadium shaking under my feet when Tatis hit his home run, when Soto hit his home run. That place was absolutely bananas. And it was, again, when the U.S. played the Dominican, but not like the Dominican against Venezuela. I mean, those fans were out of their minds. We just got a couple of minutes to go here, maybe a minute to go. But just kind of just to go back to Bernie for one more thought. Do you think that Busch Stadium will start to get some life as this team starts to? Because I hear people talking about it. Every single day, people come up to me and say, best time I've had with the Cardinals in a long time.
I hear that a lot, too. And even some people that I kind of follow on social media, or whatever, who tend to be really acerbic and pretty negative about everything. They're loosening it up a little. They're light, you know, kind of lightening it up now. So, yeah, I think the public's going to I think Cardinals fans that have been sitting this one out so far, I think they're going to respond. I definitely do. And of course, the more the team wins and if they continue to play this exciting style that's appealing to St. Louis in particular, I think that'll get people back. But to what extent? I mean, that's the one thing I don't know. In other words, I really do believe it's going to grow, but how much will it grow? you know, with the late with the labor stoppage looming and everything else, it's still maybe a little bit of a difficult sell at this time. But I think this team's very appealing. I love watching this team.
And I think people like the fact it feels fresh. It feels like a starting over.
Right.
Yeah. It does have a good feel to it. I know that. And like I said on Twitter, and I'll say it again, when my daughter, who's 15, tells me that kids at school are talking about the Cardinals and Jordan Walker and JJ, it's a really good sign. If the kids are buzzing about the Cardinals, you just watch. That means things are starting to move a little bit. Bernie, we appreciate you. Have a great rest of your day.
Appreciate you guys.
For Chris Ranji, I'm Tom Ackerman. Thank you for being with us. Ollie Marmol joined us for the first portion of the show. You can go back and listen to that right here at KMOX.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Let's